Today we're going to be going over a BlockFi update and a Silvergate Bank update. BlockFi, crypto lender, they filed a presentation for their stakeholders detailing the different plans for future court filings and a rundown of the bankruptcy proceedings. They said they reached out to 106 potential buyers shortly after they first filed for bankruptcy, and they're planning to have a hearing on January 30th. They're seeking the court approval for a hearing on January 30th to start the bidding. Notably, BlockFi claims that no management team members withdrew any crypto since August 17th, other than one, you know, minimal 0.2 withdrawal that happened around October. This is so different from what we saw from Celsius or FTX, where the management teams were just, you know, liberally lining their pockets with customer funds. It looks good on BlockFi. Prior to August, there were around 15 million of withdrawals from different executives, 5 different executives, 6 million to Zach Prince himself, and these were categorized as litigation settlement payments or payments routed through the executives for tax purposes. So they published a salary adjustment following the FTX transaction in the summer. So I guess when they did that FTX transaction, the $400 million, you know, equity transaction, various stakeholders that worked for the company lost significant money. Like Zach Prince lost $412 million in his equity in BlockFi. There's about 10 people listed, and each of them lost many million dollars. The smallest was $5 million by M. Cromwell, and the largest was Zach's at 412, but there were a few other big ones, you know, 64, 156 million, etc. So these people were also given a 2023 planned retention payment. They were promised this money to stay with the firm for a certain amount of time, but then now, given that the firm's in bankruptcy, they're not planning to pay out those bonuses, which again is different from some of these other crypto companies that were still paying out bonuses. After the FTX transaction, there were also big bumps in people's salaries to make up for the loss in equities, and those aren't all being paid out either. So it looks like some prudent management going on over at BlockFi. There's going to be a publication of their assets and liabilities very soon. It was supposed to come out on January 11th. Today's January 12th when I'm filming this, and I couldn't find it yet, so I'll keep looking for it, but I'm sure it'll come out in the next few days. BlockFi also filed a motion requesting the turnover of the Robinhood shares. SBF pledged Zach Prince, the CEO of BlockFi, approximately $450 million worth of Robinhood shares, or I think it's 55 million shares. But the bankruptcy judge, Michael Kaplan, denied BlockFi's motion because the Department of Justice has actually seized these shares in connection to SBF's criminal case. The presentation that BlockFi put out, the PowerPoint, it shows how their lendable assets have dwindled. So back in March of 2022, they had that SEC settlement, I'm sure you remember, of $100 million. It was the, you know, largest settlement we'd ever seen in the crypto space to date. They had around $12 billion of lendable assets at that time. You know, dwindled a little bit. They didn't pay out the whole $100 million in the settlement. I think they only paid $30 million, and it's been on a schedule. So that wasn't the reason that they lost all their lendable assets, but it was a contributing factor. Then the Terra Luna DPEG, that really hit them hard, took them down to about $7 billion in assets. And that happened in May. Then in June, Celsius paused withdrawals. That sent them on a big, you know, downward trajectory from about $6 billion to $4 billion. And then on 7/1, BlockFi signed the FTX loan and option agreement, and that they were just over $2 billion in lendable assets at that time. And then it went down again when FTX liquidity crunch was reported in November of 22. And then when they filed bankruptcy, BlockFi just had no more lendable assets, and they filed their own bankruptcy on November 28th. The next BlockFi hearing is scheduled for January 17th, so we'll keep you updated once that happens. And as for a Silvergate Bank update, so Silvergate has not only been sued in a class action for providing banking services to FTX, but it also recently received a letter from Senators Elizabeth Warren, Marshall, and Kennedy bipartisan, I think Marshall is a Republican, the rest are Democrats, requesting the bank to release all of its records of improper transfers. And we heard SBF on, you know, multiple spaces and very, you know, on that press tour he did, talking about how Alameda's bank account was initially how people were depositing funds into FTX, because FTX didn't even have a bank account when they started operating. So that raised a lot of suspicions to what Silvergate was doing, allowing one company that it banked, Alameda, to just transfer money to FTX without really understanding what the transactions were for. Under the Bank Secrecy Act, every bank has a duty to know its customers and to understand what's going on with that customer's business. It's know your customer, know your business, and basically they have to spy, you know, the bank has to spy on all the activities going on within its customers as part of its anti-money laundering policy. And, you know, if it was operating an effective policy, Silvergate Bank should have known that something was amiss here. So it's bringing a lot of scrutiny. Silvergate had $8 billion of withdrawals in the past couple months. It had to sell off $5.2 billion of its assets at a deep discount to remain solvent. Silvergate also took a $4.3 billion bailout from the Federal Home Loan Bank of San Francisco. So that's a really odd thing that happened there, but you know, it's good to keep Silvergate afloat. I don't know what would have happened if they didn't get that loan, but since when is the Federal Home Loan Bank of San Francisco in the business of bailing out crypto banks, you know? So in the senator letter, it said, "Your bank's involvement in the transfer of FTX customer funds to Alameda reveals what appears to be an egregious failure of your bank's responsibility to monitor for and report suspicious financial activities carried out by your clients." Silvergate is the bank for many crypto companies. They've been one of the only banks that's willing to operate in this space. And you know, they banked FTX, Alameda, BlockFi, you know, many of these, you know, bankrupt companies. And as of last September, they reported that 90% of all its deposits were from crypto firms. SBF admitted that FTX funds were improperly transferred to Alameda's bank account before FTX got the bank account, and all deposits were routed through Alameda's Silvergate account. And Silvergate's failure to report these transfers could mean it had an ineffective AML policy. Notably, in November of 21, Silvergate hired Elliptic as its AML and KYC provider. Elliptic was named 2020 World Economic Forum Technology Pioneer for its recognition was for the contributions in the field of fighting financial crime and anti-money laundering detection in the crypto markets. So it's really Elliptic's job to be identifying what, you know, doing the blockchain analysis. So I think, you know, if now that Silvergate's getting sued for these things, it's probably going to turn around and say, "Hey, Elliptic, you know, why weren't you doing your job for us?" According to documents filed with the SEC, Block One founder and CEO Brendan Bloomer has purchased 16.8% of Silvergate on November 16th. So I don't know if he knew the full mess he was getting involved with, you know, back in November. It was very shortly after FTX's bankruptcy, but he probably had some idea. He bought 9.3% personally and 7.5% through Block One. And he's now actually the largest shareholder of Silvergate. So the class action that was filed on December 14th, 22, it alleged that Silvergate's liable for the FTX collapse because it had a plain sight of the crimes being committed and aided and abetted in the breach of fiduciary duty. And as a result, Silvergate's stock, it's dropped from, it was $238 a share, and today it's at $14.32. So November 2021 was its high. And right around that time, JP Morgan analysts gave it an overweight rating and said they expected it to actually increase by another 60%. Silvergate spent $182 million in an attempt to launch its stablecoin backed by gold, USD, and other crypto assets. It actually bought the Facebook Libra technology, which then they renamed, you know, Facebook's now Meta and Libra is now called DM, but they bought that technology and then they had to write it off, and they also had to fire 40% of their staff, which amounted to 200 people. The banks reportedly lost $718 million in the last few months, which is more than its profits dating back since 2013. Silvergate CEO Alan Lane said Silvergate processed more than $160 billion in digital asset-related transfers in Q3 of 2021, which was a 300% increase from the same period in 2020. So wow, that's some really fast growth there. And then what's going on with the digital currency group? So we got an open letter from the Winklevoss, Cameron Winklevoss. The first sentence, he really came out swinging, accusing Barry Silbert of the crime of fraud. He said, Gemini and more than 340,000 EARN users have been defrauded by Genesis and DCG. DCG said that they would fill the $1.2 billion Genesis hole over 10 years and not one day. So Genesis had lent $2.36 billion of assets to 3AC, which then went bust in June 22, and Genesis had a $1.2 billion loss. And apparently at that time, or what the Winklevoss are accusing, is that Barry Silbert could have filled that hole at the time from personal funds, but instead he just let it ride, and the restructuring could have helped everyone, including the EARN users, or he could have gone into bankruptcy at that time too and done a restructuring that way. And Michael Morrow, the then CEO of Genesis, made a public lie, or that's what the Winklevoss are accusing in their open letter to Barry Silbert. They said on July 6th of 2022, DCG reported that it had assumed certain liabilities of Genesis, but that was a 10-year promissory note. It was a complete gimmick, and it did nothing to improve Genesis' immediate liquidity position. Then the Winklevoss brothers accused DCG of accounting fraud. So they said it characterized that 10-year promissory note as a current asset when it should have been counted as a long-term asset according to the generally accepted accounting principles. So a current asset is supposed to be cash, cash equivalents, or other assets that can be exchanged into cash within 1 year. And calling a 10-year promissory note cash is not appropriate. It's not part of the GAAP rules, which is, if true, accounting fraud. Instead of booking these swaps as the risky derivatives they were, Genesis hid them by mischaracterizing the first and last legs of the swap transactions as collateralized loans and the balance sheet, making the balance sheet appear healthier than it was and fraudulently inducing lenders to continue making loans to Genesis. And the Winklevoss, Cameron Winklevoss, calls for Barry to step down. The original letter, it showed 340,000 EARN users were looking for answers, and there was a $900 million loan owed by Genesis to the Gemini EARN users. You know, what are the possible resolutions here? Well, it's a little bit, it's fun to watch all of this play out on Twitter. I shouldn't say fun. I didn't lose money on it. So I'm sure the people that are sitting there wondering where their money is. The Winklevoss brothers are very rich too. You know, they're not making their own users whole when apparently, according to Forbes, they're worth $7 billion and this hole is $900 million. So why don't they just give some of their own $7 billion to make these 340,000 users on their platform whole? Or why did they take these risky loans? Why did they get involved with this kind of, EARN programs? It's all about greed and money and, wanting to make as much as they could, get as many clients as they could, and not looking at the risks that, and maybe not properly disclosing all the risks involved with this kind of lending activity. So it's like they're just completely deflecting this onto Barry Silbert, but they could fix it too. Yesterday, GBTC was actually up 12%. So Barry Silbert, or the Digital Currency Group, they also own GBTC, which has been trading at a really steep discount to its net asset value. But yesterday, it was actually up 12%. So I'm not sure why that would be pumping. I know Kathy Wood of ARK Investments bought 1.4 million back in November of 22, but maybe a bailout is coming, or Something's going on behind the scene for that to be pumping so hard. Valkyrie Investments has a proposal to sponsor and manage the GBTC, but it's a little bit of a long shot. I hope they get it. The Valkyrie CEO has been on this podcast in the past, Leo Wald, but Valkyrie manages 180 million today, and GBTC is 10.5 billion. So it would be a long shot, but maybe that's what's making it pump. In summary, you know, GBTC, it's just another case where people should just own the actual Bitcoin. You don't need to buy Bitcoin through these, you know, institutions. Just buy it yourself, hold it in a cold wallet, and you won't have to look at, you know, worry about any of this noise. But, you know, there are certain regulations that make it hard for institutions to buy it, and I think that's who, you know, largely is purchasing it through the GBTC. And, you know, that's just another example of how these restrictive regulations are hurting investors. If you like this video, don't forget to hit like and subscribe to my YouTube channel. Thank you.